Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 € pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
The 90s were a difficult time for the country and its people. Hell, it wasn't just the time period. It was the 90s. The phenomenon that will forever be remembered as one of the most difficult periods of the 20th century in Russian history, right after the October Revolution, the purges of 1937, and World War II. The Soviet Union had just collapsed, and the new government didn't know exactly what to do. Factories that for generations were supported by the state started to close, and millions of people suddenly found themselves jobless. The seemingly impervious moral standards of the Soviet man crumbled with an unexpected ease almost overnight, and the crime rate skyrocketed. It was a difficult time, but it was also the time of opportunities. Those who capitalized on the newly discovered free market prospects the best are now at the top of the Forbes charts. Those who decided to stay honest people embraced the free market at the face value and tried to ride the wave starting new businesses. Many more remained ordinary workers, not willing to take any risks and simply thankful to have a job. And then there were us, the bandits, the mafia, bratva, or the Brotherhood. It was easy money, and that alone was enough to make people join. Why slave off for a man who'd pay you pennies if you could just make a monthly visit to him along with a few of your bros and make him pay you 10 times more? Threaten his wife or daughter, kick his employees' teeth out, pour gasoline all over his table and his fancy new suit, and he would quickly find himself willing to negotiate a deal. It wasn't just robbery. No, it was a bit more complex than that. By entering a deal with us, the man was also paying us for the lack of problems, both from us and other gangs. Some businessmen were even glad to have us on their side, claiming that we were, quote, easier to figure out than the new taxes. Of course, it wasn't always easy for both parties. Sometimes some rivaling or up-and-coming gangs would ruin our man's store or set his car on fire. This was their way to challenge us for the territory, and to keep our meal ticket, we had to fight back. Sometimes they'd challenge us directly, shooting up someone's house or a car in the middle of the day. And sometimes, if the meal ticket was big enough, he could even order us out, turn to us if they wanted to settle their problems with the competitors. That was one of the few rare instances where we'd have to resort to things like kidnappings and torture. Usually, it was easy. Grab their relative at a bus stop, shove them into a car for a long silent ride around the city, let them go, and they would probably take the hint. If not, we'd have to resort to the more drastic measures, like arson and other forms of vandalism. If even that wouldn't work, then that was the time for a more close-up chat. A chat with hammers, shears, pliers, and torches. One of our meal tickets wanted some particular information beaten out of an acquaintance of his. I wasn't told what exactly he needed to say, but I wasn't there to know that. I was more of an escort to the negotiation place, which was an old abandoned warehouse on the outskirts of the city, a place where no one could hear your cries. Finding out where he lived was a trivial matter of bribing a familiar police officer, who provided us with a man's whereabouts by the end of the day. When the night fell upon the city, me and three others jumped in the car and made our way to the man's street. We had a dust bag, ropes, and a baseball bat for each of us, so we expected to easily persuade him to join us for a ride in the trunk. Many people would start spilling their beans as soon as they would see us approach, but we knew that if we wanted him to tell us everything, we had to take him with us. We parked our car not far away from his house and started waiting. The plan was to catch him on his way home from work, and after an hour or so of waiting, we noticed a man matching the description we were given. I remember that upon seeing him, I immediately started having second thoughts about our endeavor. The man was almost 2 meters tall, and although he was not a bodybuilder, you could almost see his muscles bulge through his clothes. He walked the streets with confidence that even I could envy, and his eyes were burning with ire like rubies. My initial thought was to come back later with more people. However, one of the guys already jumped out of the car and started to run in the direction of the man, swinging his bat. Not to be outdone, we followed. The first hit of a bat landed on his raised forearm. The man didn't even take a step back, instead facing the attack head-on. Despite my worries, his muscles were no match for a weapon, and I saw him silently wince as the wood cracked his bones. The second hit from one of the guys who ran over landed on the man's knee. I was confident that I heard the bones crack. The man kneeled with a soft sigh and rose his hand to stop the next attack. Bad idea. With a refined movement, my bat grazed across his fingers, bending them backward. Someone kicked his other leg, and the man fell to the ground. I'd seen it 100 times before. When surrounded on the ground, people would usually assume the fetal position and cover their head. But instead, the man was not giving up to stand up. The four of us surrounded him and started kicking and stomping. We knew exactly where to hit to make it count while making sure the man would survive. Lower back, stomach, ankles, fingers, teeth, eye sockets, all vulnerable areas that were easily hurt. And yet, despite us stomping his fingers and kicking his elbows, the man was still trying to get up, not bothering to guard even once. We were kicking him for 2 minutes straight, until finally he physically couldn't move anymore. By tomorrow, his arms would probably turn purple from all the bruises on them. When we were sure that he wouldn't be able to move anymore, we tied him up, put a bag over his head, and threw him in the trunk. While we were doing all that, I took a glance at his face. A few of his teeth were missing. His nose and lips were squashed, and his eyes had bruises around them. By the time we'd get him to the warehouse, they would probably start swelling, making it hard for him to see. After shoving him into the car, we proceeded to the warehouse on the outskirts of the city, where the others had already been waiting for us. And among them, Igor, the surgeon. He didn't have a medical education, but you can guess why everyone called him that. We pulled up to the warehouse, pulled the man out of the trunk, and pulled him towards the warehouse. Despite the heavy injuries, he started resisting, almost breaking free at some point, and landing a hit on my pal Roman with his elbow. And so we took another 2 minutes to explain to him why it was a bad idea to struggle. "You stubborn son of a—" Roman was kicking him with vengeance, stopping only to wipe off the blood that was dripping from his split eyebrow. "When will you learn your place?" After we were done with him, I was scared that we might have killed him. But just a few seconds after we'd stopped, he started moving again. Wondering where he was getting that much strength, we picked him up and brought him inside the warehouse, where we tied him to the chair. "Look at that," Roman exclaimed, pulling something out from underneath the stranger's clothes. A massive golden cross on a similarly massive chain to match. "Our guy sure is religious." The man jerked in place, trying to resist, to stop Roman from taking his cross away. And I felt a bit of respect well up within me. The man was not just submitting, he was also trying to protect the symbol of his faith. "Let him be, Roman," I told him. "Leave the cross alone, that's not very Christian of you." What we had done, and what we were going to do to the man, wasn't very Christian either. But that was different. Beating up a man to within an inch of his life was personal, a small transgression of the commandments. But taking away his cross, that was sacrilege. "Alright, alright," Roman stepped away from him. "But if he kicks it, I'm taking it. You hear that?" The man didn't reply. As usual, he remained silent. I suddenly felt intimidated by that bound and broken figure. We had been beating him senselessly, kidnapping him, bound him, put a bag over his head. Yet, he remained stoic. Not a single word fell from his lips, not a single plea or cry of pain. "Let's step outside for a smoke," I told Roman. "The surgeon should be here soon." "Yeah, let's go," Roman agreed. "You two, keep an eye on him, okay?" he told the two other thugs. "We'll be back soon." "What a strange fella," Roman said when we stepped outside. "All that beating, not a word," he said. "Do you think the surgeon will be able to make him talk?" I asked. "Oh yeah," Roman nodded. "That man can make anyone sing." Roman winced and shook his leg. "I think I broke a toe while I was kicking him." "Heads up," I told him, throwing his cigarette away when I noticed the familiar car pull up. The surgeon always knew how to make an impression. He was a professional. And back then, every pro worth his salt knew that to elevate yourself above the rest of the amateurs, simply having special skills weren't enough. You also had to make a lasting impression on the people around you. He appeared out of his car, dressed as always, shoes polished so tediously you could see the stars above reflecting them, a long coat he carelessly wore on his shoulders, and a three-piece suit underneath without a single fold on it, and a long silk scarf hanging down almost to his knees. A perfect gangster who just stepped down from the silver screen to teach you how it's done. And the thing he always carried in his leather gloves, an ugly, dirty, angular thing that didn't match the rest of his looks at all. A toolbox, the same one you'd see any plumber carry around. I looked away when my eyes crossed his. I couldn't endure his gaze. Cold, sharp and lifeless, like some of the instruments he was using. "Evening," he greeted us, wrinkling his nose and waving the cigarette smoke away. "The client is in the warehouse, I presume?" "Hey, surgeon," Roman greeted him. "Yeah, he's in there waiting for you."
"Did you warm him up for me?"
the surgeon asked.
"Yeah, we worked quite a number on that one," Roman said. "I can tell you, that guy can take quite a beating. We've crushed his face into a mush to bring him here. Quite a stubborn one."
"Really?"
The surgeon got a little bit excited, and his smirk made my skin crawl. "Well then, I better not waste any time and get right to it. If he is as stubborn as you say he is, well, we might have a long night ahead of us."
He didn't say those last words as a man who dreaded working long hours. On the contrary, he was looking forward to it. He walked past us and entered the warehouse.
"Did you see how worked up he got when he heard that the guy won't talk easily?" I asked Roman.
"Gives me conniptions. No doubt he looks forward to torturing the whole night. We shouldn't have agreed to work with him."
"If the man is smart, he'll spill the beans soon," Roman said. "So, it's up to him. Nobody will torture him just for the sake of it."
"I doubt that," I told Roman. "That surgeon looks like a guy who tormented cats when he was a kid."
A moment later, the surgeon exited the warehouse. He seemed furious.
"Is this some kind of joke?" he asked us.
"Ease up, man. What are you talking about?" I asked him.
I was not keen on his tone.
"You said you beat him up already, but he doesn't have a single bruise on him," the surgeon exclaimed.
Roman and I looked at each other. We had clearly seen the man's face. There was no way the surgeon could have missed any of those.
"Did you take off his hood?" Roman asked him.
"Do I look stupid to you?" the surgeon exclaimed. "Of course I took off the hood. You said the guy's face was a mush."
We looked at each other again. Something wasn't right. We hurried inside. The man was still bound to his chair, so there was no mistake about it. His hood was taken off, and Roman and I didn't need to get close. His face, while covered in dried up blood, was indeed perfectly fine.
"What the hell?" Roman exclaimed.
He came over closer and leaned in to take a better look. "He really is fine," he shouted to me. "No bruises, no scars, nothing." "No way," I said, coming closer. I grabbed his jaw and forcefully opened the man's mouth. He tried to bite me, and I had to yank my arm away. But when his teeth snapped at where my fingers had been just a second before, I saw that all of them were miraculously intact. I clearly remembered kicking one of his molars out. Clearly remembered seeing the broken fences of his teeth under his swollen lips when I was putting a hood over his head. This meant that somehow, the man regenerated all of his wounds and his teeth in a span of 1 hour. "He had no teeth before," I told the surgeon. "He has them now. I don't know how, but he grew them back already." "Really?" I could hear that he was not convinced. I heard the clanking of his toolbox as he hastily opened it. "Well then, you two won't mind if I test that theory." He walked over to the man with a hammer and pliers in his hands. Pushing the man's head back, he shoved the hammer into his mouth to pry it open and brought his pliers closer. I looked away, but the horrible screeching sound of pliers metal scratching against the man's enamel, the cracking sound the bone made when snapped, still made me shudder. "Quite a champ," I heard the surgeon say with awe in his voice. "Didn't even wince. We'll get along fine." "And what now?" Roman asked him. "And now, we wait," the surgeon answered. He pointed at Roman with the pliers, which still had a piece of tooth squeezed between them. "And if he doesn't miraculously grow his tooth back in 30 minutes, I'm going to be very disappointed that you've wasted my time." "Fine," Roman said with bravado, although I could see that he was a bit shaken. "If that's what you want, then we'll wait. But I'm telling you, we beat him up good." 30 minutes went by agonizingly slow. I knew that we were telling the surgeon the truth, but I didn't want to argue with him about that. Suppose the man wouldn't grow his tooth back in 30 minutes. Then what? Sure, the surgeon wouldn't be able to do us any harm. There were 4 of us and 1 of him. But he had a lot of clout with our boss. He could create some problems for us. Him saying that we weren't respecting him would suffice to do that. Respect meant a lot in the 90s. It was the only stable national currency back then. "Well, time's up," the surgeon proclaimed, walking over to the man. He grabbed his hammer and lifted it, as if getting ready to bring it down on the man's head. But the man just smiled and opened his mouth. The tooth was back there, white and shiny, without even a scratch. "Interesting," the surgeon purred. "So, you're like that, huh?" He took his toolbox and brought it closer to the man so that he could see its contents. "What these amateurs have pulled you through is nothing when compared to what I'm going to do to you," he said, kneeling near the box. "If you think that your miracle powers are going to save you, you're gravely mistaken." He pulled out a few instruments, a pair of shears, a saw, a power drill. "These are just the warm-up," he assured the man. "Do you want to see the main dish?" The man spat in the surgeon's face. The surgeon calmly took out a handkerchief and wiped the saliva off his face. "Okay," he said in a calm voice. "Main dish it is." His breathing got faster. I could see that he was excited to begin. To him, the man was a canvas which could never be finished, a meal which couldn't be fully consumed. He could get wild with him, and most importantly, he could forget about the restraint. The surgeon pulled out a gas torch and lit it up. "Let's see if you feel any pain," he said, pointing it at the man's golden cross. The fire didn't hit the cross accurately, scorching a bit of skin underneath. The man started writhing from pain, trying to break his restraints,
and still, not a sound came out of his mouth.
Good, the surgeon said. Then we speak the same language.
I didn't want to look at it. Giving Roman a sigh, I stepped outside. The rest of the gang followed, leaving the surgeon alone with his prey. The next few hours seemed like a nightmare. None of us dared to enter the warehouse, as just the sounds alone, amplified by the warehouse's emptiness, were gut-wrenching. The sounds of flesh tearing, the sound a saw makes when its metal teeth scratches against the bone, the wet, squishing sound the hammer makes when it hits meat. Sergei, one of us four, tried to enter once to see how it was going. The moment he opened the door and looked inside, he, the man who once dragged a man behind his car for 2 kilometers, threw up onto the ground in disgust. Whatever was going on inside was too much for him to bear. Yet, throughout all of that, the only sound coming from inside we could hear was the surgeon's. His screams of frustration and exhaustion. By the end of the 3rd hour, he'd finally gone silent. There was only silence inside. We feared that the silent man could break out of his restraints and attack the surgeon. Frankly, at that point, we didn't know what he'd do if that were the case. We couldn't even imagine of subduing him again. Nevertheless, I volunteered to take a look inside. When I stepped inside the building, I understood why Sergei couldn't keep himself together. The floor, in a radius of 3 meters around the bound man, was flooded with blood. Here and there, I could see bits of flesh and cloth scattered around. The stench of scorched meat and the smell of iron lingering in the air was almost unbearable. The surgeon was sitting in the pool of blood, heavily panting. He didn't look very excited anymore. In his hand, he was holding a hammer. I noticed that his palms had fresh blisters on them. The man's entire body was red from the blood he'd lost. Only the whites of his eyes were standing out. But I could see that underneath all that blood, he was fine. He was also smirking. This freak grows skin back when I'm not looking, the surgeon said, exhausted. I pull it off, throw it into the bucket, and when I look back, he's already fine. Do you want to look at the bucket? He asked me suddenly. It's almost full. I'm good, I believe you, I told him. Do you have a cigarette? He asked me. I thought you don't smoke, I wondered. Just give me the damn cigarette! He shouted so hard the windows of the warehouse trembled. Okay, here you go, I said when the echo finally subsided. I carefully handed him a cigarette and matches, trying not to step into the blood, and stepped away. The surgeon lit it up and took a deep hit. I'm not done with you, he threatened the bound man, pointing at him with his cigarette. You will talk. You'll talk so loud, the whole of Moscow is going to hear you. He jumped to his feet and headed outside. Too worried to leave the man alone, I stayed inside. A minute later, he came back, carrying a canister of gasoline with him. Now, hold on a second, I exclaimed, seeing where it was heading. What do you think you're doing? Just stand by and watch, the surgeon said, coming over to the bloodied man. I'll make him talk. You'll see. We're supposed to keep him alive, I shouted at him. Oh, he'll be alive all right, the surgeon promised me. Alive and talking. He started pouring the gasoline over the man's body, the flammable fluid washing away the blood. In some 15 seconds, the man was practically drenched in it. Here we go. The surgeon smiled and lit up a match. Just so you know, he told the man, I heard that when you're burning, the air boils in your lungs. With that, he threw the match at the man. His entire body went up in flames instantly. I saw his skin bubbling as the flames were vaporizing it and looked away. A moment later, I heard a previously unheard sound. The grunts of pain. The surgeon's plan worked. The man was finally showing the signs of feeling pain. He was finally subsiding to the torture.
"I told you, I'd make you talk," the surgeon victoriously exclaimed. "Burn!" he shouted as he raised his hands up.
But in his frenzy to make the man feel pain, in his struggle against this indomitable will, the surgeon made one miscalculation. I was concerned that the rope would burn up and break, but it would actually take a few minutes for that to happen. I'm sure the surgeon knew about that as well. What he forgot about was that the skin, once scorched to such a degree, becomes soft, malleable. It barely stays in place. And it comes off easily. The man suddenly sprung to his feet, pulling his hands, which were tied behind his back, upwards. With a quick motion, the skin of his hands, struggling against the ropes on the wrist, came off like gloves. Next were the ropes on his legs. With his now free hands, he yanked his left leg out of the ropes, which bound it to the chair, making the skin slough off in the process. Then he repeated the same with the other leg. We couldn't stop him. We couldn't even come closer to him. Throughout all of that, he was still burning and screaming. But as the man finally freed himself, his screams shifted in tone, becoming a victorious one. Still grunting in pain, the man hobbled toward the surgeon, who was in shock from what he was seeing. "How are you still alive?" was all the surgeon could ask before the man grabbed him by the throat. For the first time in the evening, the man spoke. His lips were charred and his throat was burned by the hot air. Yet his voice sounded victorious and imposing. "My body is as strong as this cross," he told the surgeon. "And my cross is as strong as my faith." He grabbed the man in a bear hug. The surgeon screamed when the fire started licking his cheeks and ears. "Are you God-fearing?" the man hollered. The surgeon didn't answer. He was just screaming. I heard Roman and the rest of the gang come inside the warehouse. None of them made a move towards the man. At that point, we doubted that there was anything we could do. We just watched as the surgeon was dying in the man's embrace, consumed by the fire he himself started. A few minutes later, when the fire finally went out, the man dropped the surgeon's burned body to the ground. He gave us one look full of pain and unimaginable anger, full of that ire I first noted when I first saw him. And we ran away. His skin was almost completely gone, and even some of his muscles were visibly damaged by the fire. Yet we knew that wasn't a fight we could win. We jumped inside our car and floored it. We drove all the way from Moscow to St. Petersburg that night, staying at one of the hotels near the road. The evening of that night made all of us quit. All except Roman. He was found scorched inside his car 3 months later. While the police thought that it was an attack of a competing gang, the three of us knew that wasn't the case. We knew that Roman alone was struck down by the righteous fury of a man whose faith alone kept him alive no matter what. The righteous fury of a man whose cross he wanted to take away. I've never met that man again. Perhaps it was because I've decided to repent and lead a more honest life. I've worked at the factory for a few years, and when things started to look up, I even started my own business with the money I've saved up from my previous, less honest life. But yesterday, I saw that man again. Not on the street, no. Those eyes, full of ire, looked into mine from the screen of my computer. It was that mad look I recognized. not even the face. No, he's shaved the beard since that time he was photographed. But the eyes stay the same. The eyes that stare at you with anger and contempt. The eyes of a man who's lived through all of the hardships of the last century, clinging to his faith alone. The eyes of the man whom so many have tried to kill. Yet none of them succeeded.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.